course, this AI and deepfake scams is something that's very popular these days. We see a lot of it. We issue a lot of public warnings around it. This case started because Immediate Matrix played exactly that role. They started the deepfake ads. And of course, the big thing always with that is such a telltale sign, and I can't say it enough, is the unrealistic returns. You know, Alec, you will, the adage, if it's too good to be true, it's because it's too good to be true. We can't say that enough. And of course, the vagueness about the product and the claim that they don't require an FSCA license, those are all huge red flags.
Hello and welcome to the BizNews News Wrap, summarizing the day's top stories. It's Wednesday, the 30th of October. I'm Lucy Ferreira. In today's headlines, the FSCA's firm stance on fraud, ShopRite's market dominance, the Competition Commission under scrutiny, we also have a look at Google's strong earnings results, and lastly, Bitcoin and gold trend as we see both asset classes rally. But before we dive in, remember that these clips are just teasers. For full interviews, visit biznews.com or tune into the BizNews Briefing with Alec Haag, streamed live at 7 a.m. on weekdays. Links are available on the BizNews homepage each morning. Starting off now, we continue with Gerard van der Venter from the FSCA discussing Afrimarkets and Bankso following our whistleblower interviewer yesterday, which is definitely worth checking out on BizNews as the Bankso saga continues. And on the back of that clip, van der Venter has urged anyone affected by deepfakes or Afrimarkets to contact the FSCA with your complaints in order to bolster and support their investigations.
Because of the possible threat to the public and the possible threat to clients' funds, at some stage during the investigation, Alec, we approached the Financial Intelligence Center, brought this to their attention, and they froze, I think it's in the region of 90 million rand in bank accounts of Bankso. And that provided the opportunity, the temporary opportunity for us to then approach the National Prosecuting Authority and more specifically the Asset Forfeiture Unit. And we've built up a very close relationship with them because this is not the first time. And they applied for a preservation order successfully. It's being appealed, but at this moment, those funds are preserved or frozen, so to speak. At the same time, because of the evidence we already found, although the investigation is not completed, we also took the step of provisionally withdrawing the license of Bankso. And it's basically saying, we withdraw this license, we can talk about it again, but for now, let's finish this investigation and see what is going on. So that is where we are today. I'm also aware that over the weekend, I received notice that there's an application for the liquidation of Bankso as well by one of the investors. So that's another ongoing process. But yeah, that's a process outside the FSCA. So this is where we are today. We are really giving this the highest priority. I've got a team exclusively dedicated to it. And we will be taking the investigation further, and then we will decide on final sanctions. Of course, if there's, we will also bring this to the attention of the Hawks. It's already with the NPA, so to speak, because of the order. But of course, needless to say, when this happens, we do look at who are the directors, who are the key individuals, and we do look for those directors and key individuals' involvement in any other financial services providers. So we are aware of the Afrimarkets issue, and we are looking at that.
And now on to Evan Walker, retail sector expert from 361. He explains ShopRite's dominance with shares soaring after reporting impressive double-digit sales growth for the quarter.
ShopRite now is investing three times the amount of capital that its competitors are investing, you know, 9 billion versus sort of twos to threes from its competitor stable. So, you know, that's just incredible. And that's going into all parts of their business, from logistics, obviously, into, you know, their new 60/60 offering, their internet offering, which is unsurpassed. And, you know, given the amount of leverage in the market, they've been able to cap the fee I mean, you can order as many times as you like from 60/60 for 100 rand a month now. So that's an effective, that's quite an effective discounting method back into your price points, Alec. If you think about it, I mean, you know, you don't actually have to drop your gross margins or drop your pricing. You just allow the customer to order again and again and again at no additional cost to you, you know. So it's quite an effective pricing mechanism in the market. And obviously, you know, I think it's a very clever way to ensure that you're still getting in-store gross margins while you're attracting, obviously, your internet customer from your competitors in a very competitive landscape.
And now Pitful Yun of ReCM critiques the Competition Commission for its misunderstanding, he says, of capitalism following the commission's recommendation to block Sun International's proposed acquisition of Peermont Holdings.
I had a very strong statement land in my inbox from Vodacom, who are pretty upset about the fact that the Competition Commission has blocked a massive investment it's going to make in a company called Massive. Yeah. This is the second time in the last few days that we've seen the Competition Commission block big deals. The other one was Sun International's proposed takeover of Peermont. Let's start with Vodacom and Massive and exactly what's going on there and why the competition authorities might be upset, and are they right?
Well, I think one has to take a step back to understand what's going on here. And basically what we have is a tension between a socialist government who doesn't trust the market to allocate resources properly and thinks that they can allocate resources better by rules, regulations, and laws, and have constituted bodies like the Competition Commission and others to do their bidding. So that's a fundamental problem. The incentives in the marketplace is to listen to or to be guided by Adam Smith's invisible hand to allocate resources to the most profitable ventures where clients' needs are serviced and they are willing to pay for those services. Whereas the incentive for commissions like the Competition Commission is to have more rules, more regulations, wider powers, and so on. So, and that's where the tension is.
So you need second-level thinking at the Competition Commission, and it appears as though that isn't being implemented.
There's none of that.
What about Sun International and Peermont? That would seem, you know, pretty open and shut case on the face of it, given that Sun International and is large and Peermont is one of the big three in that industry. You know it well because of your other investments. What did you make of the Competition Commission refusal to allow Sun International to?
Again, I find it surprising. So I have not studied the documents behind the decision. So I can't speak to why they would have done it. But just standing, looking at it from outside, the gaming business, especially the casino business, are highly regulated. Licenses are allocated geographically. So casinos can't compete with each other in the first place because each geography has a license. So I fail to understand how Sun International's acquisition of Peermont will influence the competitive dynamics in the sector at all, because Peermont's casino has no competitor close to it at all because of the licensing requirements set up by the gambling board. So that's another surprising decision, which I don't understand at all. And all it does, it speaks of a regulatory overreach and the incentives behind why these commissions exist in the first place.
And now Anthony Ginsberg, MD of Gins Global, shares his insights on Google's earnings exceeding market expectations and raising anticipation for the upcoming earnings reports from other companies in the Mag 7 this week.
The results were terrific, actually, particularly Google's cloud blew the fox off most expectations. Greetings from LA this morning, actually. Google was up on their cloud earnings 35% year on year. Cloud is actually still in the early innings, since we're in the middle of the World Series here in America. You know, there's 9 innings in a baseball game. We're in the early innings of cloud still. Less than half of all IT spend is still being impacted by a cloud. And something like 20% of work enterprise IT is only currently being utilized in the cloud. So Google to have 35% year-on-year revenue was a huge beat on the expectations. Their earnings numbers were also up dramatically. Just to give you an idea, the revenues were up 15% year-on-year. Even YouTube and the search engine business, which many thought could suffer from chatbots and AI, because there were some concerns, you'll recall, over the last year or two with ChatGPT coming in, even those had double-digit growth numbers, both on the earnings, the bottom line, and the top line, Alex. So yes, Google's numbers were very impressive. They actually, after hours, gained about 5% on the trade.
So what about the rest of the week? It is a blockbuster week when you're looking at quarterly results. We've got Meta today. We've got Microsoft coming, and also Amazon. So four of the Magnificent Seven. We've had Google. You've given us, or Alphabet. We've had that insight. The market loved those numbers. Share price up. What are you looking for on the next three? And then their impact on NVIDIA, which only comes out in late November.
It's very likely you'll see positive NVIDIA numbers based on just what we saw today with Alphabet's Google Cloud expenditure. We're looking for the line items of how much AWS later this week with Amazon are also spending on AI chips. Interestingly enough, even the likes of Microsoft with their Azure, which is actually the second largest player, will be crucial in that. So we're actually positive. You've got to remember that there's essentially a tailwind going on here in the US. Despite all the political and mumbo-jumbo, most of what's going on here is relatively positive. We're expecting GDP numbers later today, Alec, of about 3.1% plus growth. There's a lot of tailwind also with the interest rates coming down. We're expecting rate cuts in November and December. And I would say the treasurers and the CFOs are loosening their purse strings on technology spend.
And on to Bitcoin with Jason Welts, head of digital assets at Geltech. He elaborates on this week's Bitcoin rally and what to expect for the future.
But tell us about Bitcoin. It's had a phenomenal run. I'm looking at I'm having a look at the graph. This year alone, Bitcoin year to date has risen 63%. We're sitting at, as you say, 72,000. I'm not sure if that's an all-time high, but it'd be very close to an all-time high right now. What's causing it?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's quite important to kind of set the stage. This rally isn't anything new. It's not something that started in 2024. I think it really started in the depths of the 2022 bear market. But kind of to set the stage, there's been a few things earlier this year that have been very supportive of crypto as an asset class. But I think more relevant to the recent rally have been a few high-profile endorsements from players in the traditional finance space. I think Larry Fink comes to mind, who on the BlackRock earnings call was it last month or earlier this month, explicitly mentioned Bitcoin as a long-term competitor to gold and as a gold-like asset. Though very more acutely and over the last couple of days specifically, I think a lot has turned on. So we've got this really supportive environment, also supported by macroeconomic conditions and easing cycle, but a growing expectations that Trump has a very good chance of taking the presidency in the U.S. He has explicitly said that he will start a Bitcoin reserve for the U.S. government if he comes into power. Whether that's true or not remains to be seen. But a Trump presidency would be a little bit more pro-crypto than a Democrat presidency, the Republican Party being generally pro-ish. And at the same time, any sort of outcome of the U.S. election is going to be driving an increase to the government deficit there and generate a little bit of inflationary pressure, while also kind of portending some risks to the dollar as the global reserve currency, though that's probably a much longer story. And I think the clue there to look at is gold is also at all-time highs, right? The market is pricing in some sort of fiscal cliff for the U.S. government, which
inflation, in other words.
Essentially, they're going to have to start monetizing the debt to get out of their debt situation, which shouldn't be supportive of any hard assets like gold or Bitcoin.
And finally, we hear from our partners at Bloomberg regarding gold prices and future expectations as the risk-off asset rallies.
What a time for us to be having this conversation.
It's a wonderful time to be representing gold.
I was about to say, you must be busy.
Oh, you're not kidding. That's why I'm here instead of being home in New York.
So what's going on?
I think three things really have been the major drivers so far. The first is very strong central bank buying, mostly from emerging market central banks, which have realized over the years that they are overweight dollar-denominated debt in their official reserves and underweight gold, which is one of the most popular things for their population. populations with less than 5% of their reserves in gold. So for 14 straight years now, emerging market central banks have been net buyers of gold for their reserves. That's not going to go away anytime soon because they are still underweight in gold.
How much more upside are we talking about now?
I am not as optimistic as certain people on Wall Street are. I mean, a lot of people on Wall Street have been talking $3,000 gold before the end of the year. I'm not going to predict that. I think we will probably see the $3,000 target at some point, but my guess at this point is it probably won't be until next year. But I think that we can see further upside from here. Close to 2,800, it's difficult to see how much we'll see, given that we've already had such great gains.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll be back here tomorrow.